Hello, this is Atah Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, March 4th, 2025, coming to you from my home studio. We start on the front page, Together Decatur, wrapping others in pieces of love. Knitters and crocheters create afghans for people in need. This article is by Donette Beckett, Decatur. Knitters and crocheters will be quick to tell you the difference between both techniques. Knitting is two needles. Crocheting is just one needle. 88-year-old crocheter Jane Oliver said as she held one of the needles with a special hook on the end. Both styles can be used to create ornate afghans, which are also accepted by the volunteers at Pieces of Love, a service of Dove Inc.'s Retired Senior Volunteer Program. Oliver prefers to crochet the colorful blankets. Somebody that knitted can make afghans too, she said. I'm sure they do. The afghans made by Pieces of Love knitters and crocheters are donated to various organizations, including Veterans Administration facilities, cancer centers, and homeless shelters. According to Pieces of Love co-chairperson Wylene Griffey, the group donates approximately 350 afghans a year. The winter season produces more blankets. In the summer, it's kind of hot having that yarn on your lap, she said. Pieces of Love meets from 9:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every other month. At the First Presbyterian Church, 204 West Prairie Avenue, Decatur, its next meeting will be March 12th. The group will accept donated yarn throughout the year. Wool and lighter weight yarn is not accepted. They have to be washable, Griffey said. During the meetings, the group gathers the yarn, sorts through it, and knit or crochet small squares that are eventually patterned together to make an afghan. It takes 36 of those pieces to make one afghan, Griffey said. Pieces of Love members may meet just to drop off donations. Others stay to collect and sort through the yarn or finished products. Still others take home the yarn to make the afghan or squares on their own time. Oliver said she hasn't been to a meeting in some time, but that hasn't stopped her from contributing to the group. Last year, she was able to donate 88 afghans using patterns she made up. They don't care, she said about the Pieces of Love donations. I was trying to get to 100, but I didn't make it. A stack of 9 blankets in various colors were ready to go to the next meeting. Oliver had started number 10 and expected to finish it in less than 3 days, well before the next meeting. She logs the details of each afghan in a small notepad placed on a nearby table. This is my little book that I keep track of my afghans that I donate, she said. I started in November of 2019. Oliver was taught how to crochet after she was married by a neighbor. She sat me down on the couch, side by side, and said, "Do this and do this." And that was it, she said. It started from that. Throughout the decades, Oliver has made various items such as rugs, pillows, and tabletop pieces. I used to crochet with that real thin yarn and make little fancy doilies, she said. As the years have passed, Oliver's sight has begun to diminish. She said darker colors of yarn are harder to crochet. I'd love colors, pinks and blues and reds and yellows, she said about her choice hues. I don't like navy black or blue because it's too hard for me to see them. Other pieces of Oliver's work can be seen throughout the community. Crocheted coin purses with a penny tucked inside are given away randomly. It has a penny in it for good luck, she said. If you see one, you'll know it was me. And we have some color photos here. We'll start with the larger one. Jane Oliver demonstrates how she crochets her afghans for Dove Inc.'s Pieces of Love's program at her home in Decatur on Tuesday, February 25th. And it is a very colorful piece that she's working on. And there is yellow yarn wrapped around a bright green crochet hook. Joseph Ressler, photo credit, Herald and Review. And two more photos here, a medium-sized color photo, a really nice composition. A pile of Afghans made by Jane Oliver at her home is ready to be donated. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of them stacked up nicely on a bench. And they're so brightly colored. And why the photo works so well is there's dark furniture, dark paneling, dark wood, and a lot of dark features. And the shades are drawn, so the room is darker, so the colors really pop. And finally, there's a photo of Jane Oliver crocheting. It's of her in her chair as she crochets. And some sidebars here, Pieces of Love. To donate or to learn more about Pieces of Love, contact the RSVP program at Dove Inc., 302 South Union Street, or call 217-422-8417 and hashtag Together Decatur. Do you know a person or of a story that exemplifies the best of Decatur? Well, if you do, contact Donette Beckett at 217-421-6983 or dbeckett at herald-review.com. We move on to the local and nation page on A2 from the State House. Pension spending still in flux. Rich Miller. The latest report from the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability shows that spending on four core services in the governor's proposed fiscal year 2026 budget will be 9.1% less in real dollars than it was way back in fiscal year 2000. Those four core services are education, health care, human services, and public safety. The CTBA has been tracking this number for years, and although they didn't mention it in their latest report, that 9.1% figure is actually a remarkable improvement. It's also food for thought whenever you see claims that Illinois spending is at record levels. For core services, at least, we're still far below where we were 25 years ago. But that gap has closed a lot. The fiscal year 2014 state budget's core service expenditures before the 2-plus-year state budget impasse were 28% less than in FY 2000, according to the CTBA at the time. So the structural deficit, as CTBA calls this comparison to 2000, has fallen by more than two-thirds in real dollars since 2014. Fiscal year 2022 ran from July 1, 2021 through June 30, 2022. CTBA reported back then that expenditures on those four core services were 22.3% below that of FY 2000 after adjusting for inflation. That means the structural deficit will fall by 59% in just 4 years if the CTBA predictions and the budget hold up through next June 30. Using federal pandemic money to pay off billions in state debt was a huge help, and the state pension funding problem, which has historically crowded out necessary spending, has stabilized. Yes, the payments grow every year, but they've stayed somewhat around 20% of the total budget for several years. Pension payments in the FY16 budget were $6.7 billion. They're budgeted this coming year at $10.6 billion. After inflation is calculated over that 10 years, that's about $1.75 billion increase in today's dollars, about $175 million a year. And it will be lower than that by the end of June 2026 when the fiscal year expires. Speaking of pensions, the governor has proposed spending an additional $78 million in the coming fiscal year to make sure the state doesn't have a safe harbor problem with Tier 2 retirees. The state passed what's called a Tier 2 pension plan because the original plan, which had been grossly underfunded and overpromised for decades, was simply costing too much to be affordable. The plan reduced pension benefits in several ways for new hires. However, under federal law, state pensions have to be at least equal to Social Security benefits, and when the state lowered benefits, at least some folks won't receive their bare minimum when they retire. The penalty for not meeting the minimum requirement is severe. All employees would have to be put into the Social Security system, and the state would have to give those workers retroactive Social Security benefits for up to 10 years, which could be billions and billions of dollars. In addition, new hires wouldn't be contributing into the pension funds, which would deprive those systems of revenue. The teachers' unions, however, say they want to go well beyond that minimum requirement, taking care of the safe harbor. Issue would benefit mainly high-wage employees like principals. They want more money put into the system to increase benefits to encourage more people to become teachers in the first place and keep them on the job. The Illinois Federation of Teachers released a statement last month saying the governor's proposal was just the beginning of a broader repair to a grossly unfair pension that hobbles Illinois' ability to recruit and retain educators. Our members will continue to press for a proper and full legislative repair to Tier 2 pensions this session. The Illinois Education Association's statement last month said it wants a fix to Tier 2 that allows all those who serve students in Illinois an equitable retirement that entices people to stay in the profession. That proposal could cost a huge amount of money. A study done for the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability found that union proposal would cost the state $1.13 billion extra this coming fiscal year. The governor has never seemed enthusiastic about the plan, hence his $78 million proposal. Barrett to headline DuQuoin State Fair. Olivia Jacobs, DuQuoin. Country singer Gabby Barrett will headline the DuQuoin State Fair Grandstand on Monday, September 1st. Country singer Jake Owen headed to DuQuoin State Fair in August. Barrett is known for her record-breaking debut single, I Hope, which charted the top of the Billboard Hot Country Songs for 27 weeks, as well as her hit One of the Good Ones. She was the youngest artist with a number one debut on country radio in over 20 years, according to a news release. She has earned over 3 billion streams and was awarded the Billboard Women in Music's 2022 Rising Star Award, the 2021 CMT Artist of the Year Award, and the iHeartRadio Titanium Award. Tickets go on sale at 10 a.m. Monday, March 3rd via Ticketmaster. The DuQuoin State Fair will run August 22nd through September 1st. Other acts so far include country singer Jake Owen, who will perform Friday, August 29th, and rock band Tesla, which will perform Thursday, August 23rd. Visit dsf.illinois.gov for more information. Mueller Museum extends tour dates. Donette Beckett, Decatur. Hieronymus Mueller Museum will be offering staff guided tours for the public at 2 p.m. Saturday, March 8th and Saturday, April 12th. Tickets are $5 per person. The museum at 420 West El Dorado Street, Decatur, focuses on Hieronymus Mueller, his family, and the company he founded, with an impact on the water and gas industries. Tickets will be available to the first visitors at the door on the days of the tour. Space is limited. Regular hours for the museum are from 1 to 4 p.m. Tuesdays through Saturdays. Admission is $3 for adults, $1 per child, and free for all Mueller employees and retirees. For more information, visit MuellerMuseum.org or the museum's Facebook page. Switchfoot coming to Devon Stage. Valerie Wells, Decatur. Switchfoot will be in concert at the Devon Lakeshore Amphitheater on July 13th. Tickets go on sale 10 a.m. Wednesday, March 5th at the devonamphitheater.com and are included in the season ticket package. Prices for Switchfoot range from $25 to $50 plus applicable fees. Switchfoot has released 13 studio albums, including its triple platinum, The Beautiful Letdown, and the Grammy-winning Hello Hurricane. They've sold 10 million copies of their albums worldwide and sold 5 million tickets in sold-out tours around the globe. They have also raised $2 million to benefit kids in their community through their Bro-Am Foundation. Contact Valerie Wells at 217-421-7982 and follow her on Twitter at ModGirlReporter. Well, I guess it's newsworthy, but Starbucks plans menu changes, Associated Press, New York. Starbucks is making cuts to its menu, with some of the coffee giant's less popular beverages set to take their final bow this week. In its announcement, Starbucks outlined plans to remove a selection of its drinks, including several blended Frappuccino beverages, the Royal English Breakfast Latte, and the White Hot Chocolate starting Tuesday. These items aren't commonly purchased, can be complex to make, or are like other Starbucks beverages on our menu, Starbucks wrote. The Seattle-based company added that simplifying its menu would allow it to focus on fewer, more popular items executed with excellence. Starbucks says these cuts will reduce wait times, improve consistency, and make way for innovation. The chain says it will continue to introduce a handful of new items and seasonal specials, such as its Cortado beverage introduced last month, and a new iced cherry chai set to debut in the spring. The menu changes arrive amid wider restructuring at the Seattle-based company. Starbucks also said it would lay off 1,100 corporate employees globally this week, with CEO Brian Nickel citing the need to operate more efficiently. Nickel joined the chain as CEO in August. Beyond next week's menu cuts, Starbucks said that more beverages and food will also exit its menu in the coming months, representing a roughly 30% reduction by the end of 2025 fiscal year in the U.S. Here's a list of the drinks that are set to be removed Tuesday. Iced matcha lemonade, espresso frappuccino, cafe vanilla frappuccino, java chip frappuccino, white chocolate mocha frappuccino, chai creme frappuccino, caramel ribbon crunch creme frappuccino, double chocolatey chip creme frappuccino, chocolate cookie crumble creme frappuccino, white chocolate creme frappuccino, white hot chocolate royal English breakfast latte, and honey almond milk flat white. Cremo pleads guilty to mass shooting. Seven killed, many hurt at Highland Park July 4th, 2022 parade. This article is by Sophia Tareen, Associated Press, Waukegan. An Illinois man pleaded guilty Monday to killing seven people and injuring dozens more when he opened fire on a 2022 Independence Day parade in a Chicago suburb, a stunning development moments before an opening statements in his trial on murder and attempted murder charges. Appearing in a Lake County Circuit courtroom, Robert E. Crimo, 24, withdrew his earlier not guilty plea in the Highland Park shooting. Prosecutors initially charged him with 21 counts of first-degree murder, 3 counts for each person killed, as well as 48 counts of attempted murder. Prosecutors dropped 48 less serious counts of aggravated battery before jury selection last week. On Monday, Judge Victoria Rossetti read the charges to Crimo and asked questions to be sure he understood before accepting the plea. He was sitting next to his lawyers wearing a dark suit. "Is that what you went over with your attorneys?" Rossetti asked. "Yes," Crimo replied. He gave mostly one-word answers to her follow-up questions. His mother, Denise Pessina, had a brief outburst at the news, and the judge gave her a warning. "We're going to move forward," the judge said to her. "You are not a party to this proceeding. If you would like to stay in the courtroom, please have a seat and be quiet." She was allowed to stay. The judge said with the plea change, there would be no trial or further motions. Jurors were never even let into the courtroom. The legal proceedings have moved slowly, partly due to Crimo's unpredictable behavior. Last year, Crimo was expected to accept a plea deal and give victims and relatives a chance to address him publicly, but changed his mind at the last minute, shocking even his attorneys. He also fired his public defenders and said he would represent himself. Then he abruptly reversed himself. As potential jurors were questioned last week, he sporadically appeared in court, at times refusing to leave his cell. "He has knowingly and voluntarily waived those rights and pleaded guilty," Rossetti said Monday. Prosecutors read the names of all those killed in the shooting and of those injured, with the judge stopping to ask questions to make sure Crimo understood. They went over the substantial evidence, including DNA samples and a videotaped confession to police. "Our community may never heal from the defendant's calculated and heinous actions that destroyed so many lives," Lake County State's Attorney Eric Reinhart told reporters after court. He received nothing in exchange for his plea. "We were 1,000% ready to go to trial and prove him guilty to the jury," We have been working for years to prepare our evidence. Sentencing will come April 23rd, but Crimo is certain to spend the rest of his life in bars. Each count of first-degree murder carries a maximum natural life prison sentence. Prosecutors said survivors would get the chance to address Crimo at the sentencing. Social Security Administration to cut staff. Fatima Hussein, Associated Press, Washington. The Social Security Administration is preparing to lay off at least 7,000 people from its workforce of 60,000, according to a person familiar with the agency's plan who is not authorized to speak publicly. The workforce reduction, according to a second person who also spoke on the condition of anonymity, could be as high as 50%. It's unclear how the layoffs will directly impact the benefits of the 72.5 million Social Security beneficiaries, which include retirees and children who receive retirement and disability benefits. However, advocates and Democratic lawmakers warn that layoffs will reduce the agency's ability to serve recipients in a timely manner. Some say cuts to the workforce are in effect a cut in benefits. Later Thursday, the agency sent out a news release outlining plans for significant workforce reductions, employee reassignments from non-mission-critical positions to mission-critical direct service positions, and an offer of voluntary separation agreements. The agency said in its letter to workers that reassignments may be involuntary and may require retraining for new workloads. The layoffs are part of the Trump administration's intensified efforts to shrink the size of the federal workforce through the Department of Government Efficiency run by President Donald Trump's advisor Elon Musk. A representative from the Social Security Administration did not respond to a request for comment. The people familiar with the agency's plans say SSA's new acting commissioner Leland Dudek held a meeting this week with management and told them that they had to produce a plan that eliminated half of the workforce at SSA headquarters in Washington and at least half of the workers in regional offices. In addition, the termination of office leases for Social Security sites across the country are detailed on the DOGE website, which maintains a wall of receipts, a self-described transparent account of DOGE's findings and actions. The site states that leases for dozens of Social Security sites across Arkansas, Texas, Louisiana, Florida, Kentucky, North Carolina, and other states ended or will be ended. The Social Security Administration is already chronically understaffed. Now the Trump administration wants to demolish it, said Nancy Altman, president of Social Security Works, an advocacy group for the popular public benefit program. Altman said the reductions in force will deny many Americans access to their hard-earned Social Security benefits. Field offices around the country will close. Wait times for the 1-800 number will soar. Social Security is one of the nation's largest and most popular social programs. A January poll from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs and Research found that two-thirds of the U.S. adults think the country is spending too little on Social Security. The program faces a looming bankruptcy date if it is not addressed by Congress. The May 2024 Social Security and Medicare Trustees report states that Social Security's trust funds, which cover old age and disability recipients, will be unable to pay full benefits beginning in 2035. Then Social Security would only be able to pay 83% of benefits. As with other agencies, DOGE embedded into the Social Security Administration as part of Trump's January executive order, which drew concerns from career officials. This month, the Social Security Administration's former acting commissioner, Michelle King, stepped down from her role at the agency after DOGE requested access to Social Security recipient information, according to two people familiar with the official's departure who were not authorized to discuss the matter publicly. Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat from Oregon, said in a statement that a plan like this will result in field office closures that will hit seniors in rural communities the hardest. Other news organizations, including the American Prospect and the Washington Post, reported that half of the Social Security Administration's workforce could be on the chopping block. We have just a few minutes left, so we are on the Life page, Today in History. Today's highlight: on March 4th, 1865, President Abraham Lincoln was inaugurated for a second term of office, with the end of the Civil War in sight, and just 6 weeks before his assassination, Lincoln declared, "With malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the fight as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work we are in to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations." Also on this date in 1789, the Constitution of the United States went into effect as the first federal Congress met in New York. In 1933, Franklin D. Roosevelt was inaugurated for his first term as president. He was the last U.S. president to be inaugurated on this date. In his inaugural speech, Roosevelt stated, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." In 1966, John Lennon of the Beatles was quoted in the London Evening Standard as saying, "We're more popular than Jesus now," a comment that caused an angry backlash in the United States. And in 1987, President Ronald Reagan addressed the nation on the Iran-Contra affair, acknowledging that his overtures to Iran had deteriorated into an arms-for-hostages deal. And there's something called Royal Stars by Georgia Nichols. Happy birthday for Tuesday, March 4th, 2025. It says, "You are a sensitive person with a rich imagination. You have excellent powers of concentration and are deeply empathetic. This is a year of learning and teaching. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5, dynamic, 4, positive, 3, average, 2, so-so, and 1, difficult." Well, I guess that's for the rest of the signs here, zodiac signs. So there are no stars given for today, but just a narrative. And that does bring us to the end of the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, March 4th, 2025. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour very soon.